The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
That's me.
We are usually a movie discussion group slash website slash podcast, but occasionally we dip our toes into TV, and that's what we're doing tonight. We're taking a break, not a break, but we're doing a little side project from our usual three movies a month. And talk about them, write about them, discuss them, plan.
Can I make a point of clarification
yes,
in case anyone's confused? We are not actually a website. Like, we have a website that we post, that you post to.
I haven't seen Topper in a long time.
We're not physically a website. I don't want people to think we're actually a website, because you said we are a website.
Topper's been talking a lot about the movie Virtuosity lately, so I think it's because he has entered the internet himself and has dissolved his various connections into zeros and ones, and as represented in the movie Virtuosity, starring Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe.
Oh.
I thought maybe he just liked that movie. Maybe it's autobiographical. I don't know.
Well,
I think he might actually be a website now.
Well, if JR did the same thing, they'd just be Lawnmower Man, I think. So.
Yeah, there are many cinematic versions of what we're talking about. Lawnmower Man, The Net. I don't know what The Net was about. Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny Mnemonic, here we go.
Yeah.
Hackers? No, that wasn't that way.
Just all these clear and accurate representations of what the future of technology would look like. That's where the Mediocre Movie Club is at right now. We are websites. We are movie reviews. That is all. We exist in the ether. Anyways, we are together tonight to discuss the HBO series Watchmen. Brian, this was your idea. Why don't you tell us why we're doing this?
I read like two paragraphs of a review that sounded interesting, and that's all I needed before I closed the review so nothing would be spoiled. Seemed like something fun after our Deadwood days. And I don't have anybody to talk about Twin Peaks with, so we're going with Watchmen.
You're telling me that your daughter isn't super into like cows being exploded by machine gun fire, and you haven't like broken down piece by piece the premiere of Watchmen?
No, not yet.
I'm surprised. That's surprising to me. I know Jeff, Shane's son Jeff, is super into it.
We'll save that for third grade.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeff was like, that's a metaphor earlier.
Oh, my God. So, first thing, background with this specific property, Shane?
I am probably one of the few people that actually liked the Watchmen movie, which I know does not exist in this universe, and but I've never read the comic.
Brian?
I watched the movie because someone told me to watch it, I think when I lived in Chicago, so a dozen years ago, and I don't remember a single thing about it, and I never read the books.
I have read the comic and bought the extended version of the of the movie on Blu-ray.
4 hours, so, right?
Yeah, give or take. So the property itself, this is widely recognized as the greatest comic book ever written. Not just like plot or continuity or whatever people read comic books for, but for how it comments about the genre itself. It considers what superheroes actually look like, and not superheroes, but just masked vigilantes who pass themselves off and or are marketed as heroes when they very well may or may not be, and how quickly they would be captured by methods of power, specifically the Nixon government, which in the Watchmen universe lasted for like 20, 25 years. There is one superhero in the entire universe with actual powers called Dr. Manhattan. And there are like two crux points in the Watchmen universe. One is the emergence of these mass vigilantes and society's embrace of them. And the other being the creation of this god who famously in the comic book, the line is, the Superman exists and he's American. So, okay, if you have that kind of power on your side, what do? You send them to Vietnam and you turn Vietnam into the 51st state, just totally annihilate everybody. Hence, giving Nixon so much power, yada, yada, yada. In the movie, the big instigating conspiracy is a plot to frame Dr. Manhattan for exploding a lot of energy signatures around Earth and killing a lot of people because he's not human anymore. He doesn't relate to humans. He doesn't like humans. Everybody's against Dr. Manhattan, the world peace.
But he keeps his giant
giant floating dong,
yeah,
is present. He can make it as big as he wants, but he's tired of these normal flesh-colored dong demons, and he leaves.
You and me both.
but that's actually a plot instigated by Ozymandias, one of the masked vigilantes. Well, he's not really masked, but again, here or there. In the books, Dr. Manhattan is not framed. It's actually an elaborate psychic alien spontaneous appearance in the middle of a city, a giant squid who shoots out these like mental rays. It's very silly. This is something the movie kind of does a little better. But everyone thinks it's aliens. Earth is under attack. World peace. Nobody knows. The heroes all agree that they're not going to tell anybody that it was Ozymandias so that they can have world peace. The only person who disagrees is Rorschach, who is exploded by Dr. Manhattan, but not before he like dumps his secret journal into like a conspiracy style media string. So there's a lot in the comic. The comic is great. The comic is one of my favorite books. I unabashedly love it. The movie, not so much. It takes a lot of the wrong lessons. It's extravagantly, or it's violent for the sake of violence for really no reason. Like, why would there be a giant blood pile when a god who can control matter can just evaporate someone? Like, why would there be blood left? Because Zack Snyder's a vicious, vicious director who has really run his string out in Hollywood, I think. But the TV show, created by Damon Lindelof of Lost and The Leftovers fame, he is adapting the comic and not the movie. So squids exist. They rain from the sky. Although it's fake, and I'm sure we'll find out how it's fake at some point in the future. So I like alternative history. Where are you guys at on alternative history? Because that's fundamentally what Watchmen is about. It's like imagining this different world that existed in late 20th century America, mid to late 20th century America. And we're continuing to go down that path. Like, HBO previously flirted with alternative history when Benioff and Weiss had the brilliant idea to do What If the South Won the Civil War?
Jesus.
We don't talk about that necessarily, but that's like the laziest possible shit imaginable. I feel like this is going to be a little more sophisticated.
Yeah, I love alternative history. We've talked about it here before. There's an author named Harry Turtledove who is like
that. Sounds fake.
That may be fake. I don't know. It's a good follow on Twitter. But
Shane, are you Harry Turtledove?
No, but he's got, he definitely has a Civil War one, and he has a World War II one where we're invaded by aliens in the middle of World War II.
Sure.
And, I don't know. It's fun. I mean, it's corny, but it's fun. It's fun just to take, it's always just fun to have some real life stuff, you know, real life people, and you put them in this fake future or this alternative history, however you want to term it. And I don't know. You've seen something recognizable that kind of gives you a base for that world.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is prompting the viewer to imagine just a world where it didn't go how it went. And the more like nuanced and far away in the past that can go, all the better. For those listeners who have read Les Miserables, there's a long section in that book, one of many, about the Battle of Waterloo and how in Victor Hugo's imagination, this may really be history as well. I don't know the exact military history of the Battle of Waterloo, but a scout didn't report on a ditch that was in the middle of the battlefield, and it was overlooked, and Napoleon sent his cavalry through, and they all filled up the ditch and weakened his army enough to the point where he lost the battle. So who knows what would have happened if not for, you know, a guy seeing a ditch and telling the right people or not. I love that kind of stuff. Just the way history can pivot on something so small and significant, seemingly insignificant as that. But yeah.
Brian, any experiences with alternative history?
No, most of my reading and movie watching tries to involve things that are either sci-fi or not real. So I'm down for alternative history, as modern society is too depressing to watch over and over again. So appreciate that. They are very slowly revealing the things that create the alternative history. It tells a nice little side story to keep you entertained as you start to learn about, you know, the president of 30 years and why they have the masks and all kinds of fun stuff like that.
Yeah, with that, let's get into it. We've been talking about alternative history, but the series begins with an instance of real history with the Tulsa Race Riots from 1921, wherein a series of misunderstandings and rumors and latent racial hatred exploded into a full-on battle in the middle of Tulsa on what was then referred to as Black Wall Street. And there have since been memorials and digging up mass graves, which is going on right now. But yeah, the Air Force was called in and people were shot from planes. And that was an instance of just mass racial anarchy and wars with that active role by the KKK and so on and so forth. And we see this through the eyes of a little kid who we suspect that we see later in the series, all grown up. But who knows? Again, this is Damon Lindelof. I've never watched any of his shows all the way start to finish. But Lost, of course, is all... And The Leftovers, to my knowledge as well, that's a series about 3% of the world's population just suddenly vanishing. And while that series has ended, my understanding of it is that they never answer why that happened. Just people have to live with the aftermath. So whether or not the answers are forthcoming, what this specific instance has to do with the future of the series and the plot of Watchmen, the TV show, who knows?
So that thing is interesting. I don't think anyone was prepared for it to start this way. I don't think there's a lot of people who know about the Tulsa race riots.
Sure.
Or the bombing of Tulsa, really. It's not really a race riot when it's just a massacre.
Yeah.
I heard it in a podcast, either an econ podcast or Radiolab or something from the Smithsonian in the last 2 years. I had no idea this was a thing. Like, how did no one ever tell me this in school? Beyond me.
I mean, I think we know that.
Yes.
I did do a little bit of research. Rumors of a lynching, the black population goes to justifiably stick up for the potential victim. They are met, shots ring out, mild casualties turning into giant casualties. Brutal. This is happening at the same time as, I haven't read this book, but something Silver Moon, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's about an Indian tribe in Oklahoma who are at one point some of the wealthiest individuals and certainly the wealthiest Indian tribe in the country. And then just gradually they start to disappear and be assassinated and the land starts to get scooped up. And I very much would love to read this book, whose name I don't remember, but it seems very much in this vein of like potentially seminal incident in American history of a minority group managing to make good and then an all being taken away from them.
There's a really good thread on Twitter from a guy named Michael Harriott. And Harriott is Harriot. He's a writer of The Root, going through this kind of this racial terrorism history. And it's stuff like I'm not familiar with any of this, and I got a damn history degree. Just the responses to in the South when the Union soldiers are still there, black leaders being elected to Congress, and then all the violence that ensued after, and all the ridiculous laws, and the murders, and the KKK killing thousands of people altogether. So if you're on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter, I retweeted it. But if you don't follow me on Twitter, Mom, fuck you.
Come on, Doreen, get it together. So the series opens with this moment of racial disharmony. And as the series kicks off, it kind of seems like all that's, if not remedied, then getting on its way to being remedied. Like the first instance we see in the present day is of a scenario that many movies, more and more so lately, depict as racially swapped, a white cop pulling over a black man on a dark highway or a city street or whatever, and it goes bad. Except this time, the cop is black, the driver is white, and it is the cop who has to attempt to use deadly force, but before he can, deadly force is used upon him. He's not killed, but he's seriously injured. This is the first time we see cops wearing a mask, and this does go back into the idea of the central idea in Watchmen of what it means to wear a mask in public, what it means to be a mask vigilante, so on and so forth, but that's spreading out to the cops. And where's your sympathy at in this scene? Obviously, it's with the cop, which is
right.
Deliberately flipped, I think, for 2019.
obviously it's with the cop. I mean, now he's pulled the guy over. We don't see any indication that the cop is out of line by pulling him over.
Sure, he's very formal, instructive of what to do. He doesn't raise his voice in any way.
Right.
I don't know why the guy was pulled over necessarily, but I don't think it's important to the specific incident.
And then he gets shot.
Yeah.
For doing his job.
And he gets shot, yes.
Possibly for doing his job. Yeah, I mean, the sympathies with the cop. Brian?
Well, I don't know. Why wouldn't they be? I'm very confused. Why would my sympathies be with the guy who shoots a cop?
Here's a for instance. There is a movie coming out in the next month called Queen and Slim, where Daniel Kaluuya, who starred in Get Out, and a black actress who I don't recognize, who may very well be new, they go on, not a rampage, but they flee from the police after they're involved in a police shooting. And it seems in previews that the cop in that instance is out of line, but they do kill him. And then they're sheltered across the country, and that feels like a movie that could only be made today. Whereas a movie about a cop who was killed in the line of duty in no way feels like something that would be made today. Just because of all the conversation, the cultural conversation around police brutality and so on and so forth. So there, with the real incidents of the Tulsa race riots so quickly followed by this like deliberate flipping of like a cultural perspective, political perspective, I don't know, like the show's going to fuck with you, I think.
Yes, 100%. I mean, there's more they're going to fuck with us later with this as well.
I haven't thought enough about this.
The redneck
about this show
is playing, he's playing rap as well.
Also true.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
So, which we all knew that growing up, like all of our racist Facebook friends definitely listened to Tupac back in the day. 100%. Every single one of them.
That's a reasonable assumption. We cut from that scene. We're not going to go see my scene. I'm just trying to wrap my head around this series. There's a lot going on. I have a lot of questions of you guys as well if you're following it. But in the immediate, we follow that scene from, and this happens in today with all black cast of stuff, but we see an all black cast performing Oklahoma.
Brian.
Being watched by a mostly black audience. I feel like it's pretty clear what the series is doing. They're putting people of color in an authority high point and a cultural one as well. It's just a small location of Tulsa, sure, but who knows how big the world's going to blow up.
Brian, how many times have you watched the musical scene?
Well, I only once, but I actually preferred the old Judd is Dead song. It's so much better. Like,
is that the song that ends the episode?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that one. It is sad and it is hilarious at the same time. If you watch Oklahoma, that's the highlight of Oklahoma, not Oklahoma.
It's I think Shane and I Judd both are utterly confused. I take from context clues that is a song from Oklahoma.
Yes.
Not that I would know anything about that, having never seen Oklahoma.
All right. So as we are going to detour here for a second.
Sure.
As we continue the selective choice of MMC movies, we have to do a musical round.
Do we?
Yes. That is a blind spot in your cultural awareness.
Hmm.
Does
Popstar count as a musical?
No.
If it gets Brian a musical round, I bet he agreed to it.
Singing in the Rain, Oklahoma, and then I don't know if you can find
Popstar. Never Stop. Stop.
Pop.
That,
sorry, didn't we do that one already? Never Stop. Never
if
Stop.
If not, that truly sounds awful to me. And like Singing in the Rain, I want to say is number 20 on the Sight and Sound list of lists.
You should be embarrassed you haven't seen that by now.
I guess. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
You haven't seen it. How are you supposed to know?
I mean, that's true.
I mean,
you're right.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. We can move on back to...
You're right. It's a blind spot. Fine. I can't disagree with that. I think there's a good reason when the Oscars does their salute to musicals of the 21st century...
Hey, while
there's like three movies to choose from, and then they have to move on.
While we're talking about blind spots,
yeah,
you guys did the podcast about Mary Poppins. And so next time I had Jane in the car, I said, Jane, can you tell me any songs from Mary Poppins, the new one? And she started singing two of them. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know two they are. And she hadn't seen the original from a while, but she can remember anything about it. And then I asked her, the question was, you know, something like, what was your favorite part? And she specifically brought up the scene about how the mom was still with them and helping out their family, like in spirit, and how Mary.
I don't remember that at all.
Realized it. I know, and I thought this was the literal opposite of John's review, in that, you know, the mom had nothing to do with it, and Mary Poppins didn't seem related to the mom. And I asked my daughter, with no context clues, what her favorite scene was, and she just completely refuted your review. I thought it was fun.
All right. Well, I'm glad it worked on her, and I look forward to the day when she sees much, much, much better movies about dead parents.
Yeah, well,
and banish Mary Poppins Returns from her memory.
I can't wait. We're gonna save this and tell our audience, but we are doing a live MMC show in the Midwest. John versus Children.
You think it's gonna be a movie discussion fight, but no, it's an actual fight.
An actual fight.
We start with me versus five children,
yeah.
And then who knows what happens next? It goes from there. How many children can I throw over a fence?
Robin Hood, the cartoon sucks, Jeff. Bah!
Me fighting children, that's funny. We find out in one of many details that takes the story from the end of Watchmen, World Peace is broken out, into what happens after that, in the 30 or so years after that. We learn that Robert Redford has been president, the only president since Nixon, who, for the purposes of the show, I don't know, maybe he was out of office in the late 80s, I think. One of the things he's done is he's potentially spurring this replacement of white people at the top of society, as much as we see, if that wait viewing is even correct.
Wait a second.
Brian.
Did I miss the part about it being Robert Redford? I thought it was just...
It's explicitly... His picture's on the wall in a classroom where you would put a president's face.
I think it's... Yeah, it's a context clue. It's prior knowledge plus the context clues that you're probably not really seeing the first time around.
This is purely the TV show's invention. Robert Redford plays no role in the comic book.
I thought I read earlier that he did. Like, he was mentioning he was thinking about getting into politics at the end.
Oh, that might be true. But it's not like the writer of Watchmen has any desire
to
ever come back to this. He's a famously standoffish guy with a beard down to his balls, I want to say.
Who is it? Which show is it?
Alan Moore.
Alan Moore, that's right. That's right.
See, I thought it was just some guy with the last name of Redford.
Totally. It's the Sundance Kid himself. And one of the things that he did as president was he gave out what has popularly been called, not gave out, but he got passed what has popularly been called Redfordations, which are reparations. So there's a lot of resentment amongst the white, well, at least one dirtbag white kid. Presumably the Cavalry, which is a Rorschach-themed militia group who has been suppressed but is now re-emerging. And it's heavily suggested, if not certainly suggested, that the shooter of the cop is one of the cavalry. Cavalry spelled with a K. I think that's very important.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's where the show starts, more or less. In an outbreak of world peace, American society has been reordered to account for past sins. And maybe we're going to commit some new sins. We'll see what happens. As far as characters that we see, it seems like Regina King playing a character whose name I don't have off the top of my head. I think her name, Night Sister? I was thinking Night Sister, but I wasn't sure. But she is in public.
Her intro. Why did she talk about being from Vietnam? That was very confusing.
Because Vietnam was utterly destroyed by Dr. Manhattan in the Vietnam War, because he arose at about that same time and the government enlisted him to take over that country completely, and they became the 51st state. Her parents may very well have moved out there, and born there, and so she's an American citizen that was born in Vietnam.
Sister Knight,
yes, okay. She is our lead, Regina King, you know, at the peak of her powers, I would say. Like, she has been toiling, not in obscurity necessarily, but like under the radar, probably since Jerry Maguire, maybe even earlier, when she was Cuba Gooding Jr.'s wife. And in recent years, she's won a lot of Emmy Awards for a little scene series on ABC called American Crime. And she won an Oscar last year for If Beale Street Could Talk. And now she's anchoring an HBO series. So fuck yeah, good on her. She's awesome. She, in public, is a former cop because it's not safe for cops to announce their identity or be known in even in ostensibly safe Redfordations paid out society. Cops are kept secret. She was injured in the White Night, which I assume is a period of cavalry violence uprising. And since then, she is a baker on the surface, but when she gets a special pager, or when she gets a special page from the chief of police, played by
Don Johnson.
Played by Don Johnson. She becomes Sister Knight and goes around stomping people's asses.
Yeah, it's I was going to follow up on this. We were talking about characters, but just to go back to the cavalry versus the cops. And like, you know, we're initially on the cop side. Masks are outlawed after the White Knight for citizens, but cops wear them. So you're protecting one and not the other. You're affording rights to a group of people, but not the other group of people. So it's already doing this quick flip on that power structure right there, just that alone, who can be masked again. So,
mm-hmm. Which was also a thing in the Watchmen comic, and I believe the movie as well. The movie happened, the movie didn't happen, here or there. When the comic takes place, mass vigilantes have also been outlawed. So, this is an extension of that. And we also see that the cops employ masked vigilantes that are presumably not cops. There's not only Sister Knight, but there's a Russian-looking dude in a red mask.
Yeah, his name I didn't catch. Let's call him Red Man.
Sure, that all sounds. Yeah,
he's the rapper.
No problem there.
And who is the Tim Blake?
Was it Tim Blake Nelson?
Tim Blake Nelson.
He's a detective, an interrogation specialist. Who's again? I didn't catch his name. But he wears a reflective mask.
Looking glass.
All right, that's all. That all sounds fine. There's a scene of him interrogating someone the Sister Knight beats up from a trailer park with a Nixon inflatable. And he interrogates this person with a lot of images from real history and alternative history within the Watchmen universe. Get some good information out of him. That leads to like the main action set piece of the episode where a bunch of cows are killed and you see Night Owl's warship.
Bow violence, by the way. Bow violence. Is what we determined. That's
true. That's not taking a bat to Bo Jackson's knee. That's exploding cows with machine gun fire.
Absolutely.
If you tried to do that to Bo Jackson, he would surely turn the bat back on you.
100%.
And then we would have a different kind of bow violence. the episode ends with Sheriff Don Johnson being lynched by who we presume to be the cavalry, Sister Knight finds him. And within that, there's a tiny little transition to an English castle estate. Did you guys have a sense of that?
She also finds that there's the old guy in the wheelchair that somehow got out there.
Yeah, and again, this is just going to be like a weird mystery that who is this guy? He's played by Lou Gossett Jr., I believe. He's a name actor. He's going to, you know, be important. And obviously he didn't hang the sheriff. He probably knows something about it. Maybe or maybe not. He's the kid from the intro. There's a lot of questions. Do you guys have questions about... Were you able to follow this, I guess?
Yeah. Well, we transitioned to the English castle.
Yeah.
That's... We're pretty sure that's going to be Ozymandias, right?
Yes. Yeah, he's explicitly been cast. Like, Brian, did that make sense to you, the English guy?
No, I don't know. He seemed like some old English guy. I don't know what they're doing.
Okay, fair enough.
And with his robots?
Robots, brainwashed, clones, I don't know. They don't make cake well, and they like to scrub thighs while he types.
I mean, I could get down with that.
Sure. He's working on a play called The Watchmaker's Son. Watchmaker's son
would
being Dr. Manhattan.
Yes.
From the comics.
Disconnected
from the plot. Who knows what is it doing? Trying to find Dr. Manhattan, who I believe we see a news report of. He's been seen on Mars. which is a place that Dr. Manhattan likes to go.
Brian. Play the role of clueless person in everything we watch.
So that's totally fine.
Like, anyone else notice Sheriff Judd do the cocaine at the party?
Sure, yeah, a little toot.
I was like, wait, what is that? What was that? So it just little bits and pieces like this world. It's like, okay, that was in front of kids. Like, what is going on? I guess that's okay.
I wanted to know more about like why the wheelchair guy mentioned the 200 pounds thing, and then the sheriff is 200 pounds and dead beside him. That's still what I'm most curious. Little thing I'm most curious about.
Yeah, I think the series is going to be mysterious for mysterious's sake. I am more curious. I'm less curious about the characters than I am about what this world is going to look like as we where are those baby squids coming from? There was no real squid attack. Ozymandias must still be making it rain squid. I don't know how he's doing that, but he must be. That's a question. The Tulsa, the race riot stuff that we mentioned, that could just be a motif for the show. I'm interested in the Calvary stuff, obviously. That seems very interesting.
Yeah, I think what interests me the most is, are they actually all bad? Like, what is going on? I think we're the context clues is that these guys are racist. But
yeah, Rorschach is like the lead character in Watchmen, I would say, but he's awful.
He is awful. Well, I mean, that's
the
point.
He is a straight up.
That is this character in the comics to go beyond what the bad guys are doing. How bad the bad guys.
Yeah, not just like in his actions, but in thought as well. Like, he's a Travis Bickle type character who is a total misanthrope, who hates everybody, who doesn't think society is worthy of the quote unquote good deeds that he's doing for them. His famous line is that all the whores and politicians, and I think liberals, will look at me. And this is quoted in the episode. All the whores and politicians and liberals will look up and ask me for help, and I will whisper no. So he's got a big messianic complex, real self-aggrandizing, not unlike a lot of some of the messaging that came out of like far-right publications in the 2016 election. Like, it's the 3% election, it's the 1993 election. Either we take the plane down or we're all gonna die and we'll take a lot of people with us.
Shane, you think the cavalry is gonna be something more than just pure evil? You think they're gonna have some redeeming qualities of freedom or something?
Yes. I think it's gonna be way more dynamic than way more dynamic than just these are a bunch of racist guys. Which I'm trying to remember in this episode, were there any clues that they were racist?
Just that they quote Rorschach. And
that's it.
And the idea, too, that Rorschach, they probably know all about their whole society is structured on world peace breaking out. And a side effect of world peace breaking out, I think you can probably draw a direct line, is that there's some kind of peace dividend, like the 90s in America, and that dividend was probably spent repaying black people for, you know, all the stuff that they've had to endure. And obviously they're not fans of that. And Rorschach deposited the truth of the matter in such a way that the only people who are pushing it are right-wing rags who no one would listen to anyways. It would be utterly indistinguishable from conspiracy theories in our world, except this one is actually true. So they have the secret knowledge, these people, presumably, about what really happened. No one believes them. Everybody thinks they're dumb for even suggesting as much. Like, did you not see the giant squid that destroyed cities and made people's brains explode? I presume that that's going to be what's undergirding their grievances. Right. And just the fact that they know means they read a lot of far-right rags,
right,
which by their nature are racist. So right. I'm making a lot of extra textual connections
right.
that may or may not be in the show. I assume they're racist.
No, I think all that context is correct. I was just trying to remember if there was any overt racism that we saw, and I don't think there was.
I don't think so.
Which is a nice touch, because it's never that easy. Obviously, looking at our current political climate, but
there aren't good guys in the comic book. Some people have better intentions than others, but everybody is more or less corrupted by the end of it. And again, Alan Moore does not have a positive view of humanity. He's not like a Frank Miller type who is like an out and out fascist. Like, I like 300. 300 is a fun movie to look at, but that book itself is fascist. It's the definition of fascist. And like, he's only gotten crazier and crazier since then. So he's like the opposite. He's practically a communist or an anarchist. Is someone going, and he doesn't have anything to do with this, but is someone going to read Watchmen, someone smart like Damon Lindelof, who's coming off like a critical career peak in The Leftovers, is he going to so badly misread Watchmen that he's going to make the cops the heroes? No,
I don't
he's
think
not,
so.
Definitely
yeah.
not.
It should bother. It should be, I think, a bad television watcher is going to watch this episode and be like, well, the police are awesome. Go police. It yeah. shouldn't. It shouldn't. So, but it really just plays, it's really playing off our current climate of.
Listen to these. We're the liberal news station. Let's get a bunch of CIA flunkies on to tell us how the world works.
Yeah.
Who are on camera lying to Congress and paid no price for it.
Right.
So, yeah, like. The idea of, you know, being on the right side of history and just totally forgetting about how you got there or people that were opposed to you on the way there, this will all be very interesting.
Shane, I have to take a little bit of issue that there's your average TV viewer, if you watch just this episode with no history, there's the police haven't done anything wrong yet.
That is inaccurate. They took a man with no suspicion.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
And then he was racist and beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Beat the piss and blood out of him. You're right. Literally.
Okay. Sorry. I'm just saying the start of it is one of their own is killed. I forgot about the torture scene.
Yeah. And then them going on, you know, which I don't know the laws in this world, but there seem to be quite a bit of rules. So I can't imagine that you can just roll up to a farm somewhere, guns drawn with a spacecraft and ready to shoot them.
But they didn't shoot until they were fired upon.
Right, but they weren't there for an investigation. They were there because they got tipped off and they were there to go shoot somebody.
No,
they were there for retribution. There's no justice involved there.
No. They were there to capture people because that's why they had the suicide pills.
And then lock them in a room and beat the piss and shit out of them.
Yes.
So until you see the torture part, you just assume they're there for capture.
I mean, it's like 20 minutes into the episode.
You don't know when you watch that scene that they're out for just blood.
But no, the torture part,
they got the information from torture.
Right.
And like cops also are killed in this moment. So like unjust fruit of the poison tree, you know, leading into more cop casualties. And
you're right. So this was after. You're right. I'm confusing myself.
Yeah.
I'm backwards. My bad.
A lot of stuff happened in the episode. And Brian, you mentioned that you're going to play the role of the guy who is a couple steps behind or whatever.
Yeah. Which I'm successfully doing so far.
So, like, moment.
I can't wait for the musical episode because Brian's.
Honestly, that would not shock me in the least if there's a musical episode. Were you able to follow it moment to moment? Is it just like permanently furrowed brow?
I mean, I was confused at like the squid and why the lady from
Vietnam had no accent.
the lady from Vietnam had no accent. I feel bad bringing this up. Can we talk about maybe we shouldn't.
The
little white kids that are adopted by the black family as someone who lives around many people who have done the opposite. There's a lot of white families here who adopt.
I think that's all aesthetic. That's all visuals, just flipping an expected look of a blended family.
Yes.
Right. It was good. I've never seen that in a TV show or movie. First time.
They're actively fucking with us.
Yeah.
In a good way.
If a theme that this series comes down on is like, be careful what you wish for to be in a position of power and comfort, because then you'll just abuse power on whoever's beneath you again. I don't know. That seems a little facile, a little shallow. I hope the series has more on its mind than just that. Kind of seems like it could be going that way. Like, Regina King is playing the role different from the characters in the movie played it. Like, she doesn't seem to have any flaws at this point if you overlook the torture stuff. And the way that's filmed, as in you don't see it, and the reaction amongst the commentary, amongst Twitter, and that kind of in those kind of forms is like, look at this badass kicking her way through, not through, you know, cavalry trailer parks. So it'll be interesting to see if the show is inclined or even able to turn him into a Rorschach style anti-hero, which I think again is important for what this property is. It shouldn't just be uncovering a racist conspiracy to steal watch batteries.
I don't think there's any way in hell that that's what's going to be.
Yes. And like all the trailers, most of that footage was taken from this first episode. So I don't really have any idea where it's going.
Oh, see, there's the line we need, is that you have all the speculation. And as soon as my mind gets to, I don't know what's happening next, I'm just satisfied. I'm like, that's good. I don't have any idea what's going on.
It'll be interesting. I'm going to stick with it. We're not going to do this every week.
Unless we're super pumped, then we might
do this.
I'm interested. I'm not like hooked in necessarily. Succession on HBO just ended. I was firing that up at 9:02 on Sunday nights. I was very much into that. I don't feel the same way about Watchmen, but it is just starting.
I am all in.
I didn't watch Lost. I gave up on The Leftovers, so I have yet to worship at the altar of Damon Lindelof. Prometheus is not a good movie. More accurately, it's a really terrible script, and so is Star Trek Into Darkness. It's interesting.
Pretty good pilot.
It's interesting.
This is a pretty damn good pilot.
Dense as fuck.
Audio is amazing.
Did you notice all the smiley faces, Brian?
What?
It's a recurring motif in Watchmen, is just smiley faces showing up everywhere. The eggs formed a smiley face. There were others.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm sure they're all over the place in the background, and I'm sure there are many websites dedicated to
finding all these things.
I noticed. Yeah.
Really missed out. What was I?
The final image of the episode is a drop of blood landing on a sheriff's badge. That's also an iconic image. Not necessarily a sheriff's badge, but a drop of blood landing on a smiley face is the iconic image from Watchmen, and this is, you know, a play on that. So
I was doing this thing and poor Judd is dead.
Yeah, again, that for me, that was just a song that, you know, located the title of the episode, which was called It's Summer and We're Running Out of Ice. So we're going to return in 2 weeks to talk about this again, and we'll proceed through the end of the series going every 2 weeks, or through the end of the season going every 2 weeks.
Unless Shane and I return next week to talk about all the things you're wrong about. And,
We would love to have an anti-John episode.
So prepare to not have your uhs and your ahs cut out.
Probably.
That there are no disturbing or concentration-breaking sounds in the background, because I will not be editing. I'll find out with the rest of the end. I'll listen to the Media Community Club podcast for the first time.
I was the OG editor. I think I did like the first two or three episodes. Yeah. I can whip one out real quick.
All right. We'll be back in 2 weeks to discuss Watchmen. We all know that Shane and Brian aren't going to record a podcast by themselves.
Wow, I feel challenged.
It's not going to happen.
Disrespected.
You know what Shane is really good at? It's spite. You tell him he can't do something, it's on.
What we are also going to be recording in a couple weeks is our next movie podcast about our latest trio of movies. We just reviewed El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, and Black Swan is up next, followed by The Neon Demon. We'll get together, whoever is up for that, in the Media Movie Club to discuss those three movies. But for now, you can follow us on Facebook at Media Movie Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Media Movie Club. You can check us out on the internet. Again, we are web pages now. We just posted a review on said web page, I just posted a review on the Media Community Club web page about The Farewell, one of the best movies of the year, starring Awkwafina, about a woman who returns to China to see her grandmother for what she thinks is one last time. She's been diagnosed with cancer, but her family is choosing not to tell her. And the whole family has to go through the motions.
I listened to This American Life. Yeah.
It's a superb movie that I saw at the Atlanta Film Festival. The crowd loved it, and I love it as well. Heard a whole bunch about that. You know, get hyped for our end of the year extravaganza. We got 2 months worth of activities planned that I think are going to be a lot of fun, considering the last 10 years in cinema and maybe a little bit of TV. And I think that will do us for tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
See you next week, Shane.
Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Have a good night.